This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Last summer, the river in my little valley displayed its bottom for the first time. No one living can remember seeing it, and it wasn't really a lack of rain, it was the thin covering of snow in the mountain headwaters. On a warming planet, it makes sense we'll get less snow, but few of us have really worked out what that could mean around the world. A multinational team of crack scientists just released the paper, The Potential for Snow to Supply Human Water Demand in the Present and Future. It's not looking good. From the Columbia University Earth Institute and affiliated with NASA, we have Dr. Justin Mankin on the line. Justin, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, thanks for having me.
As you can tell, Justin, I have a vested interest in getting enough snow, and that's a strange concern for a Canadian, let me tell you. What happened to the snowpack in the mountains of California this past year?
This past year in California, we saw record near-record lows in Sierra Nevada snowpack. There are lots of facts and figures that get thrown around about the actual amount of California's water availability that originates with Sierra snowpack. We know enough to know that it's a large fraction of California's water demand by such snowpack, and we know that the transition in places like California from being a snow-dominated regime up in the mountainous regions to being, say, a rainfall-dominated regime, has some pretty big consequences, not just for people, but for ecosystems as well.
Is declining snowfall just a problem on the west coast of North America?
No, it doesn't appear to be. I mean, certainly as you noted in your introduction, we know that in general, a warmer world is going to mean that freezing elevations are going to increase in a lot of places. And if you can imagine kind of climbing up a mountain, you know that as you get higher and higher towards the peak, there's less surface area over which snow could accumulate. So increasing freezing elevations, right, this is the kind of the altitude at which you'd have a phase transition from rainfall to snowfall. Those are going to increase in the future in a lot of locations. The complication here is that we know that it's this kind of subannual mix of temperature variability and precipitation variability that kind of determines whether or not precipitation falls as rain or falls as snow. And further, we know that there are going to be places that benefit, and I use benefit in quotes here, meaning they have the potential for increased snow on multi-decadal timescales because we know that a warmer atmosphere holds more moisture. And so places that still remain below freezing in winter times are going to have more moisture in the air, which, if it precipitates, will fall as snow. So, you know, the complication here is this subannual mix of temperature variability and precipitation variability. But then there's a whole host of physics that are really quite complicated that determine how long snow stays on the ground for and the extent to which it accumulates. And those things are pretty challenging. And so what we really tried to do in this study you referenced in your introduction, is identify, we have a pretty good sense of what's going to happen with global warming, that snowpacks are going to reduce, but the implications of that snow response, even if it's varied from place to place, say potential increases versus potential decreases, the implications of that response is going to be a function not simply of the supply of snow, but how it's demanded and used. And so what we try to identify is where in the world people are reliant on snow in the present climate, and then examine the potential of a future climate snow and changes in rainfall to supply present demand as well. And we identify in the 421 basins that we kind of demarcated in the northern hemisphere, we found that there are about 97 basins in the present climate that really need snow to fulfill human water demand.
Now, I'm presuming we're talking about long-term trends here. In these times of extreme weather, could there not still be the odd year where record snow shows up, maybe even this year?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we're already beginning to see that in California. And, you know, and this is one of the things that's really challenging, not just in kind of estimating how snow is going to change in the future, but communicating how it's going to change in the future, and by extent, helping to prepare water managers for what the kind of varied forms a world with global warming can take. So we're already seeing that because of a phenomenon in the Pacific Ocean, in the tropical Pacific Ocean called El Nino. It's essentially just a mass of warm water that has piled up off the eastern Pacific, eastern tropical Pacific. And that happens on timescales of, say, every 2 to 7 years or so. And this year, the temperature anomaly in the eastern Pacific is actually quite high, and that has typically, really strong El Nino events have typically been associated with pretty wet California winters. And this year, we're seeing a really strong El Nino event, and it's already beginning to have some of its attendant or associated consequences. And so there was a really large snowfall event in the Sierra Nevadas earlier. But again, this is kind of a one-year event, and the California drought has been going on for 4 years. And we know that the four-year deficit, we would need to have a pretty tremendous year from kind of a snowpack perspective and from a kind of a wet California winter perspective to really make up that prolonged four-year deficit that we're seeing in California. And with and kind of hoping for an extremely wet California winter can come with it a whole host of other challenges, such as the kind of need to manage flood risks and landslides and those types of events as well. So the point being that an extremely wet California winter won't make up the deficits that have accumulated over the last 4 years.
Now, it seems to me the snowpack is almost like a reservoir where the dam is really just time. So I'm wondering, it may seem like a stupid question, but are we really getting less snow or is it just melting faster and earlier?
Right. That's a great point. So there's kind of a couple of features that are happening, right? So we know with increased warming, according to our best model projections, that the fraction of precipitation that falls as snow in many northern hemisphere regions during winter will decline. That's a pretty robust estimate. So more often than not, the temperatures during winter will not be cold enough for snow to fall, and instead precipitation that in a past climate formerly fell as snow will fall as rain. So that's kind of on net less snow even falling out of the sky. And for many places, in places that might see snowfall increases, and here's kind of another complication, in places that might see snowfall increases, precipitation increases in general are also expected, and those snowfall increases may be outpaced by rainfall increases. Those snowfall increases may be outpaced by rainfall increases. So still, the fraction of precipitation falling as snow would decline. We also know that the snow that does accumulate, there will still be snow that accumulates, but there'll be less accumulating and it will melt early in the season and change runoff regimes quite drastically in a lot of different places. And the fact of the matter is that if you just look at a map of the northern hemisphere in the heart of winter, just a huge fraction of northern hemisphere landmass is covered by snow. And that kind of intimates that all the complicated ways that ecosystems in particular are really tied snow to snow's accumulation. You know, for forest ecosystems, for example, there are numerous studies that point to the fact that snow cover provides a layer of insulation on the ground, protecting vulnerable root structures in forest ecosystems, that it also helps kill pests that try to overwinter and cause a lot of the forest diebacks, such as we're seeing in the northwestern United States. So as winter is warm, beetles, for example, bark beetles will tend to be able to survive those cold winters. The other feature of it is that, you know, come spring, a lot of riparian and forest ecosystems rely on the fact that snow pulses off a tremendous amount of nutrients in addition to water. And that feature is really critical, and I think one that a lot of researchers are beginning, a lot of ecologists are exploring the implications of that. So you're absolutely right that snow, It's not just on net a change in the amount of snow that accumulates on the ground, but also the timing of the runoff regime and therefore kind of the phenology in a lot of these ecosystems, and then just kind of the cadence of human water demand. I mean, in a lot of these, if you were to just look at it, say an annual climatology, a monthly climatology of human water demand in the San Joaquin Basin and rainfall, you would see that, you know, human water demand begins to peak around March and April. It kind of starts to and heads up to a peak in the heart of summer. And that's precisely when precipitation is at its lowest in the basin. And so there's this mismatch between what's demanded when and what's provided by the atmosphere. And snow is this tremendous kind of natural infrastructure that regulates water availability during those months of atmospheric shortfall.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith talking with scientist Justin Mankin about disappearing snowpacks. Justin, was your group able to calculate how many people in the world depend at least partly on snowpack as a source of agricultural, irrigation, or drinking water?
Yeah, I mean, we provide an estimate, and I'm happy to give it. In the 97 basins that we identify as being snow-dependent, there are currently about 1.9 billion people that live in those basins presently based on 2015 population estimates. And I think it's important to really flesh out what I mean by snow-dependent. We can't go back in time and say this water molecule, which was transpired by this agricultural crop in this valley, originated a snowpack in this this mountain pass, and this water molecule originated as rainfall and was used in this industrial process. So that's something we can't do. What we can do is we can identify places where snowmelt runoff is a part of the hydrological regime within a river basin. That is, that on seasonal scales, accumulates snow, and then that snow melts and provides water availability to the basin. And at the same time, we can identify those basins where rains in spring and summer are insufficient to fulfill all human water demands. And so what we can then do is kind of give a bulk scale characterization of the fraction of the leftover demand after removing the amount that could be supplied by spring and summer rains. This demand needs to be fulfilled by some other source. And there are lots of different ways that humans have devised to ensure water availability during these months of shortfall, typically in spring and summer when demands are at their highest. And snow is one of them. Groundwater pumping is another. The building of storage reservoirs is a third. So there are a number of strategies in place to ensure water availability. And what we're identifying here is the potential that snow has had in the present climate to supply that demand that's left over. So you can imagine for any one of these basins, there's going to be a constellation of policies, of management practices that are going to ensure water availability during those months of shortfall. And snow is among them. And what we're identifying here is the places where snow has had a unique potential to supply this leftover demand. This demand that would be unmet by spring and summer rains, and therefore where management practices might need to change in a future climate based on the risks we identify of decreases.
Where are some of the most sensitive bases outside of California that are threatened with declining snow and water supplies?
So there are kind of two factors that we're really looking at here. There's changes in snowmelt runoff, which is something that we expect, but at the same time, I noted earlier that a warmer atmosphere is going to hold more moisture, so we expect a lot of places to have increases in rainfall at the same time that we would expect them to have decreases in snowmelt runoff. And so a critical quandary here is the extent to which this increase in rainfall, if people had the means to capture and use it productively, to what extent could these increases in rainfall actually offset some of the losses from snowmelt runoff decreases? And so what we tried to do is to take that into account moving into the future. And the places that are at greatest risk are those locations where you expect both decreases in snowmelt runoff and decreases in rainfall runoff. So they're kind of doubly affected over the spring and summer months when demand tends to be highest. And there are non-trivial likelihoods in a lot of basins, including in the American West, the North American West, including on the Iberian Peninsula and the Italian Peninsula and parts of the Middle East and Anatolian Peninsula and Turkey. There are also a number of basins in the Caucasus and in Central Asia that do also have some non-trivial likelihoods, nearly, of decreases in both rainfall runoff and snowmelt runoff. Just from a snowmelt perspective, there are a large number of basins that have over 90% risk that we identify as having potential increases, and those are similar basins to the ones I just named. So from a 90% risk perspective, Sacramento, and the San Joaquin, the Rio Grande, the Atlas Basin in East Africa, Northeast Africa, Iberian Peninsula, parts of the Italian Peninsula, and around the Aegean Basin. You know, what's actually quite interesting is that the Indus Basin we identify as having a pretty low risk of decreases in our measure of water availability, and that's because the increases in rainfall runoff really compensate the decreases in snowmelt runoff. And so this kind of highlights another really important point that I intimated at earlier, which is that our measure is capturing this interaction between snowmelt runoff and rainfall runoff and its ability to supply spring and summer human water demand. And so in a future climate, if what was formerly accumulating as snow is now falling as rain, that presents a really different management challenge to people, because people need to be in a position to capture and use that water. Otherwise, it will just run off to the ocean. The great thing about snow is that it kind of releases water concurrent with some of these increases in demand. And so our kind of ability to identify, to parse that out for different locations that we identify as, say, having equivocal risks, meaning that there are not decreases in a measure of water availability, will have to be in a position to respond to this transition from a solid precipitation regime, i.e. snowfall, to one that's a liquid-dominated one, i.e. rainfall. And that isn't captured by our analysis.
Well, climate change is so inconvenient, and it doesn't help that this complex planet is hard for humans to grasp at all. Your science, I think, has contributed to it. We've been talking with Justin Mankin, lead author of the new paper, The Potential for Snow to Supply Human Water Demand in the Present and Future. You can find links for Justin and this paper in my weekly Radio EcoShock blog at ecoshock.info. Justin, thank you so much for finding the time to talk with us.
Oh, happy to do it. Thanks, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith reporting for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.